and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman. This is the My View Matters Radio Network. The music is acting badly today. I don't know. Sometimes Blog Talk Radio is funny and the music goes up and down and doesn't listen to what I want it to do. But if you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And there's a ton on the agenda tonight, just a ton. Before we get started, though, as always, we like to start with the political rhetoric generator, the silliness that it is. And tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where Washington elitists and overpaid CEOs can corrupt our iPhone apps. Yes, it's silly, but it's fun. So, anyway, boy, where to even start tonight? I'll tell you what, we've got so much going on. You know, I guess the very first item of business is daylight savings time. And, boy, if you've caught a daylight savings time show in the past, you know where this is going to go. But I absolutely despise daylight savings time. The concept may have worked at one time, but we have good data from Indiana when they switched over to daylight savings time a decade ago or so that it doesn't save anything. It does not save time. It does not save money. And perhaps ironically is the long chronicled list of negative things that come from daylight savings time. What's funny more than anything is that in some attempt to expand or grow the supposed savings, for daylight savings time, were extended, I forget how many years ago now, and to the point where we only really have quote-unquote regular time for like 4 or 4.5 months. So if daylight saving time is the norm, why don't we just call that regular time? And then perhaps we can call the rest of the year daylight wasting time. Because, you know, I mean, what's the opposite of saving is wasting. And so we're spending time or wasting time or whatever you want to call it. But I absolutely despise daylight saving time because I am one who has insomnia and sleeping problems anyway. And I get into a rhythm, and that's a good thing. Obviously, in the fall, it's not so bad. We all fall back, as it were. But in the spring, it's particularly brutal. And even in the fall, there are disruptions to patterns. There were a number of stories, you know, that, of course, came out always. They always come out on the day or the day before daylight savings time switch, whether going into or coming out of. And the interesting ones are the ones about how there's one here about parents and kids and how the kids don't change their sleep cycle just, you know, because daylight savings time happened. And in many ways, that debunks also the old version of why we still have daylight savings time, which is supposedly for farmers. You talk to any farmer, they don't care. And for the most part, it's almost like digging in of heels, just refuse to admit they're wrong in the government side of things. I mean, daylight savings time does not save anything. It increases stress, which inherently increases the health costs of individuals because of the higher levels of stress. And it doesn't work. It doesn't save anything, especially for those of us here. You know, I used to admire Indiana for not doing it, and I was very disappointed when they decided to do it. And honestly, I had always thought that Kentucky should do something similar, that we should have basically held to one time zone or the other and let the rest of the world change back and forth and do all their craziness. You know, there's no reason that we couldn't. And there's all kinds of good data out there now about how we don't have any good reason to continue to do daylight savings time. There are some people who like it. Okay, and that's fine. I would ask those same people, is there anything that, for whatever reason, prevents you from doing the things you want to do otherwise, just at the beginning of the day instead of at the end? But think that this speaks to a typical big government program, that you have government forcing something on the people, changing the time, creating these standards for time. It doesn't have the intended consequence, right? The intention is to save money, save energy. But it doesn't. It doesn't save anything, especially for those of us here on the far end, the western edge of the time zone, in the eastern time zone. You know, it doesn't solve anything. It doesn't save anything at all. And as I mentioned, when Indiana switched over, there was a very good study done that showed that the average household was actually consuming more energy as a result of daylight saving time. So it doesn't solve anything. It actually creates more problems for many people. Again, there's all the documented health hazards, the sleep deprivation, the stress on the body, all those different things. But we continue to plow on, and we continue to keep this silly program in place. And at this point, why not just make it so that it's the same time all year round? We're down to almost two-thirds of the year is one time and one-third of the year is another. Well, why? Why not just make it the same time all year round at this point? It's not like in the wintertime it's going to make a lick of difference anyway. I mean, what difference does it make? Anyway, again, the number here, 858-683-1326, and I'm going to get off the daylight savings time stuff because that, it just frustrates me, and we've been over this before. I know it's been many, many months ago, but it's just not worth the heartache and the stress of going over that again. Boy, let's see here. News from around the U.S., an organization pushing for jury nullification has posted billboards and signs throughout Washington, D.C. Now, for those of you not familiar with jury nullification is a movement that goes back to what the original intent of the jury actually was. And this is actually a very important issue. Juries are created not because the government wants 12 people to sign off. They were created as a check and balance. They were supposed to be a check against the prosecution of laws that the public deems unjust. On the front lines, every day, there are laws out there that are just silly. And just in general, right? I mean, there are laws out there that are just silly. And people get prosecuted for many of these laws. The jury is not supposed to be some sort of sign-off to say, yep, that's right. The jury was supposed to look at the facts of the case and determine on a case-by-case basis if they agreed with the application of a law. And they could find someone not guilty, therefore rendering a law moot as it was being applied in a particular instance. It's actually a very important check and balance, and one that hasn't really been in place for a very, very long time. And I don't want to get too detailed. I could take up a whole show going through the jury nullification movement and everything that's about it, but I just think it's interesting because the legal powers that be have a freaking conniption fit every time jury nullification comes about. Because by law, there is nothing that commits a jury to rule guilty or not guilty. They cannot be forced to say guilty. They cannot be forced to say not guilty. The jury has the option. And the reason the jury exists is specifically to prevent rogue prosecutors and rogue judges from over-applying laws in nonsensical ways, or to stop the application of laws that are just nonsensical from the start. That is the historical role of the jury. But that's been lost over time. We now have processes to weed through juries and make it so it's not a random 12 people. It's a pre-selected 12 people, often pre-selected by the prosecutor and the judge, who aren't necessarily acting in the best interests of the defendant. And we're supposed to have a system that is innocent until proven guilty. And it goes against that very system, that very concept, when you basically are rigging a jury to be more likely to find someone guilty. So jury nullification is all about a jury having the right to decide not guilty when bad laws are applied to good people, or when other laws, we won't even call them good laws, but when laws are generally poorly applied in bad ways. That's the purpose of jury nullification, and it is within the power of the jury to do that. But a defense attorney is not allowed to tell the jury that they're allowed to do that, for whatever reason. And as a result, it's left up to outside organizations to try to inform the public, the potential jurors in the future, that they have this right. And I believe it's something that is important, that, you know, were we actually taught civics anymore in school, this might be something that was taught to students, that, hey, you know, the jury has the right to say no, prosecutor, no, judge, we disagree. We don't want this person found guilty. But we don't teach civics anymore. There are very few people who actually understand how government even works, which is sad. And so it's important for these groups to push these ideas, these concepts, these legitimately legal and proper concepts out to the public. Now, of course, this freaks out prosecutors who oftentimes are either hired or elected based upon conviction rates. It freaks out judges because they basically are no longer a judge per se, but a referee, which really is what they're supposed to be in a system with a jury. They're supposed to be more of a referee, not a true, you know, judge and executioner. I think it's important to note that the jury nullification movement is out there. I think it's an important movement, and I really believe that people should learn more about it. So I'm going to tell you to do the same thing that the signs in D.C. tell people to do, which is go out and Google jury nullification. Jury nullification is a grassroots citizen activist mechanism to get control of our judicial system. We oftentimes focus on getting control of our legislative mechanisms or the executive branch, but not a lot of people talk about getting control of the judicial branch. And that is the way. That is absolutely the way we do it. And make no mistake, it's important. Story here from a couple of weeks ago, I didn't get to it last week because we had the goofy callers calling in and trying to blow up the show for no reason. But a district judge down in Texas was found with proof that they were coordinating with prosecutors to get convictions. Now, that's completely illegal, right? And make no mistake, it's my understanding that this happens a lot more often than it, you know, obviously gets reported or people get caught. This only got caught because they were sending text messages back and forth to one another, so there was a record of it. Dummies. anybody learn anything from Nixon? I guess not. Anyway, the point is that's how they got caught, but this is the type of conduct that they call it ex parte communication. This is the type of conduct that specifically violates the rights of defendants in criminal cases. And it is up to the jury to reel in that type of behavior. And if for whatever reason you're ever, you know, accused of a crime, I want to strongly, strongly encourage you to not take the prosecution's deal, to instead go to a jury, especially if you're innocent. Don't admit guilt and take a deal if you're innocent. I've been accused one time of a crime, and I was completely innocent. And, you know, the police were putting all sorts of pressure on me to just admit that I did this. I'm after 3 hours of hemming and hawing with the police over the whole thing, I just finally, they're, you know, oh, it'll be so much better if you just plead to this and admit to this and blah, blah, blah. And my counsel, who was present, it's like, oh, no, you should just go ahead and plead on this. You know, in the end, I couldn't do it. I'm not going to. Not only is it lying to admit to do something you didn't do, but it's lying, and it's detrimental as well. Why would I lie to hurt myself? That really makes no sense. And so in the end, after I refused, the police actually went back and did their work and investigated further and found that, yeah, sure enough, I was innocent. Well, no kidding, I knew that. But boy, were they leaning on me hard to admit to something I didn't do. And I guess the point is, if you're ever in that situation, I encourage you. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving you legal advice. I'm giving you personal advice. Don't admit to things you didn't do. And by God, if you are doing something illegal, especially if it's something stupid, you know, harmless, but illegal because we say so, not because it's really bad, don't be an idiot. Don't get caught. I mean, seriously. But at the end of the day, it's important that juries are there because there are laws that are being prosecuted that are just silly. Absolutely silly. And the juries have the power to say, no, we're not going to convict that person of that crime because that crime is stupid. And it does absolutely have an effect, absolutely does, because what that means, let's say, for instance, and my understanding is this is what happened in a couple of municipalities on marijuana. The juries kept saying not guilty. People were getting off when they faced a jury because the jury would refuse to convict someone of possession of marijuana. What that does is makes it so the prosecutors will stop bringing the cases. Again, they're either elected or they're appointed, and they use that conviction rate as their resume. So if they're not able to convict, they're not going to bring the case. When prosecutors won't bring the case, the police stop arresting people for it. Because, I mean, yeah, you can go out and arrest people, but woohoo, you've arrested them and you let them go, and then they're acquitted. And you do that over and over and over and over and over. Eventually, even the police get tired of that. So, point is it can have a really big impact, really big impact, if people know their rights and their role for when they're on a jury. Now, speaking of police doing crazy things, in Tennessee, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, some of them are now driving big rigs. Why are they driving big rigs? So they can try to find people texting while driving. Now, obviously, these people are texting and driving, weaving all over the road or creating a massive hazard. Not that I'm encouraging people to text while drive, but if you're not able to tell if a person's weaving in and out or causing some problem, are they really causing a problem? You're really going to go to you know, driving around in a big rig and looking down into people's cars to see what you can see. I mean, that, not only is that kind of crazy, because they're obviously not really creating that much of a hazard because you couldn't figure it out other than if you were driving a big rig and looking into their vehicle, but on top of that, how much gas is that burning to be driving around a semi all day? Semis aren't known for their good gas mileage. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. They just, you know, and then there's this other story now, and this one came from Russia Today, of the police working with Facebook to try to break up potential protests, organizing protests on Facebook. And that's crazy. I mean, really? In a way, that is the police violating people's First Amendment right, or conspiring to do so, I should say. They're not explicitly doing it directly, but they're conspiring to do so. It's just amazing. Switching gears a bit, but staying on the courts for a moment, there is a appeals court ruling that came out on Friday that sided with some Ohio business owners that challenged the birth control mandate under Obamacare. And essentially, what this is all about is that Obamacare requires that certain plans be purchased at a certain price, with certain coverages and certain deductibles and all that good jazz. And what this comes down to is part of the things that are required are birth control services for women, and there are people who object to using birth control. And there's a number of reasons why, and we're not going to get into that tonight. It doesn't matter. This gets to religious freedom and the people who are allowed to – there's nothing that should require an employer to provide insurance at all. In fact, employer-provided insurance developed over time as a perk to encourage people to stay working at a particular place, not as some sort of, well, you know, because you've got a job, you get insurance. But under Obamacare, since they offer insurance, they have to offer insurance that has a certain level of coverage or face a penalty. And it includes things like this birth control, supplying birth control drugs and whatnot. And is all about, should people be forced to pay for plans, for insurance plans, that specifically go against their religion? Obviously, the Catholic Church is very much against birth control, and there are others who are as well. This is the problem you get into when you start trying to mandate people buy things. This is the radical shift that's occurred because of Obamacare. And again, for those that aren't paying attention, this is Obamacare is Romney Care, is Hillary Care, is Heritage Care. You know, this plan originated with the Heritage Institute or the Heritage Foundation or whatever the heck they're called. It was similarly promoted by Hillary Clinton. It was implemented by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts and now has been implemented nationwide with Obama and the Democrats in 2009. And, you know, the news on Obamacare just keeps getting worse. I mean, boy, have they taken some serious hits this week and the week before. There are stories now coming out that the Democrats absolutely knew that the whole, if you like your insurance, you can keep it, you won't have to change your insurance, that claim was a lie, which, by the way, I'm one of the people for which that was a lie. And there was a massive hack on the website. Apparently they're having some problems with, I don't know if it's a session handoff or what, but basically if people are going through the website and then doing the handoff to a provider, and I guess this is in the national exchange, they're coming through with other people's information. And it sounds like there's a breach of privacy here. And that should be pretty interesting to see how that comes out. They basically, on healthcare.gov, the person filled out their information. It says, you have a notice available about your potential benefits. He clicked on it, and it's somebody else's benefits. So very, very interesting. The information is shared out there. And HHS still hasn't responded. They still don't acknowledge this problem. one of the funny things that happened with all of this stuff with the exchange and all that, I don't know if I have that up here or not still, but somebody gave the woman who's in charge of that, Sebelius, they gave her a Website for Dummies book at a public event. Oh, man, that's funny. So, so funny. At length, ad nauseum, about how Obamacare, until this employer mandate kicks in, we're going to stay in this recession. And I have, again, more information saying the exact same thing over and over. They do business studies, and it shows over and over that businesses are nervous about the mandate, that until this thing goes and they know what it is, they're not going to hire anybody, that many have been laying people off, trying to stay under that magic 50 number that isn't quite 50. It's kind of 50 with an asterisk and has a bunch of weird math behind it. We're going to stay in this mess, and it's not good. It's really not good. And it's so bad now that there are Democrats who were elected to the Senate in states that went for Romney who are freaking out and asking now for the individual mandate to be delayed or for the deadline to be extended because of all the problems with the website. Basically, they already see the writing on the wall. They know that their opponents, their Republican opponents, next year are going to use this whole horrible rollout, this whole debacle, as campaign fodder to run against these Democrat incumbents. It's going to be ugly for them, and they know it. So they're asking for extensions, and they're forced into the position of having to come out against the administration and against Health and Human Services for failing to get this website to work right, for failing to have this all right. And in fact, I heard about it. I didn't see the story, but I heard about a story where Kentucky, you know, all these tech geeks out there from the left are just in awe that Kentucky, oh, ha, 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 butt of all jokes, Kentucky, is the only state to get their exchange quasi-right. The last numbers I saw, apparently there are 26,000 people signed up through our exchange, although some of that's debatable because apparently some people were getting signed up on accident. They were filling it out just to price shop, and all of a sudden they're enrolled. But let's go with their number, 26,000 enrolled. Meanwhile, a story came out this week that 260,000 are going to lose their insurance. So 10 times as many people as are enrolled right now are going to lose their insurance as a result of the health care law. And again, that's a bad break for the administration, for Democrats in this state especially. And that's going to tie into the Senate race, I guarantee you, in 2014 here. Whoever the Republican opponent is, if there's a Libertarian in the race, whoever, there's certainly going to be a lot of you'll hear about the health care law a lot, especially since Grimes is on the record now having supported that. So we're past the bottom of the hour here. I apologize. I'm running a little long here, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled and the My View Matters Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. If you'd like to call in, the number here tonight is 858-683-1326, 858-1326. All right, so getting back to it here, because there's still a lot to get to. Story here about the Census Bureau came out with stats that show that means-tested government benefit recipients, in other words, people who receive money or benefits out of means-tested programs, outnumber full-time workers. And boy, that's not a good sign. In the fourth quarter of 2011, there were 108,592,000 people in the United States who were on a means-tested program, whether that's food stamps or whatever, right? Meanwhile, there were 101,716,000 people who worked full-time year-round in 2011. What that means is that there were more people getting stuff from the system than there were full-time employees. Now, there may be some overlap there. Certainly, there are programs out there that even when making minimum wage are available. But it's a bad sign. And if you add in some of the non-means-tested programs or all of the non-means-tested programs, an additional – hold on, here we go – yeah, that brings the number up to 151,014,000 people receiving benefits of some sort from the federal government, while only 101 million people are supporting 151 million people. And obviously that's not good. And it's very obviously a contributing factor to our spiraling debt. There have been now some things changed on the food stamp program that people are trying to get all up in arms about that it's going to cut some people off and whatever, but something's got to be done, and I don't really necessarily have all the answers, or I don't have a silver bullet answer for sure, on how to solve this problem. We've got too many people. We've got 1.5 people for every person working full time. 1.5 people are taking something out of the system for every one person that's putting in. And that's obviously not sustainable. It's just not sustainable. And so something's going to have to be done. I don't necessarily, like I said, I don't have the silver bullet answer, but it's a sign that there are things very, very wrong. And what's really troubling about that is we're still moving the wrong direction, right? We're still going the wrong way. Story that came out about the power plant, Big Sandy Power Plant down near Louisa, Kentucky, that's getting shut down. Jobs are being lost. Power costs are going to go up. And I had a discussion about this earlier today with a friend of mine. He's like, well, you know, let's say the EPA is doing this in good faith. And I'm sure that, you know, this plant, my understanding is it's one of the older plants. There's apparently two plants, I believe, two coal plants being shut down in eastern Kentucky. And these are the older plants. They are the heavier polluting plants. Fine. But this is not something new. This has been going on for some time. And even as someone who's not a big government, you know, planning type guy, you know, this is a real failure on the part of those who are the planner types to plan. You can't just cut people off and go, okay, well, we're cutting your power off. Good luck. That doesn't make any sense. Right now, I talked to a gentleman, I think I mentioned this last week, I talked to a gentleman who's expecting to do the hydroelectric plants along the Ohio River. Well, we're still years out from those coming up. And I'm a huge fan of hydropower, huge fan of hydroelectric power. But couldn't we have waited to shut down these coal plants until the hydro plants were ready to come online? It's not like we're creating new pollution, right? This is old stuff that's out there. And, yeah, we probably shouldn't be polluting. I'm not a fan of pollution. But we're not doing any new damage, right? We're doing what we've always done or have for some time. So if you're going to plan, right, at this level, at least plan right. You build a plan that says, okay, we're going to power down this after we bring this other stuff up, and as we bring this new stuff up, we're going to shut this old stuff down. That's the way, if you're going to play the big government planning game, that's how you do it. And that's the amazing thing about this, is that even big government is failing at being big government, which is no big surprise. We've talked about this on the show. Government doesn't work logically. It just does. And that's why these big government plans are never what they come out to be. It's why Obamacare is such a mess. It's why all these federal programs are a disaster. And there's a big push to go to green power. And, I nothing wrong with green power per se. But the right way and a wrong way to do it. And in Europe, they're having problems now where because they're pushing to solar and wind power, those are ways to generate electricity, certainly, but they're not generating consistent electricity, or they are unable to provide consistent levels of power, whereas a power plant, you know, they can turn up, turn down, they can adjust some things. And so in Europe, they're basically, the major power companies are having problems because they are being competed against with government subsidies for green energy. But the green energy is not as reliable, consistent, whatever. So basically what they're predicting is that power prices are going to have to go up, actually, and simultaneously you're going to see less reliable energy. You're going to see brownouts. You're going to see problems with the power grid. And again, not wisely thought out by these big government planner types. Not well thought out at all. And it's kind of funny. I mean, in a way, it's ironic, right? I mean, what a shock, I guess. It's not shocking at all. Well, we've got 17 minutes left in the show, and I've got a lot to cover. So we're going to switch gears completely here. In recent weeks, after the shutdown, everything else, and really even before the shutdown, there's been an effort for quite some time to smear the Tea Party. And, you know, there are different Tea Parties, and we've talked about this on the show before. There are different Tea Parties out there. Some are better than others. Even within the state of Kentucky, there are very good Tea Parties, and there are some pretty bad Tea Parties out there. And then there's everything in between, and that's okay, whatever. But what's funny is that since the shutdown, even the Republican Party itself now is talking about going after Tea Partiers, and even to the point of talking about primarying Tea Party Republicans that have already made it into office. One of the big ones that they're talking about that I know about is Justin Amash up in Michigan. Now, Justin Amash is a very libertarian-leaning Republican. And there's a gentleman who's known up there. He's a banker of some sort. I don't remember all the details about him. But basically, Karl Rove's PAC has promised to support this guy in an effort to get Justin Amash out of office. And it's kind of funny because the GOP establishment has demanded lockstep loyalty out of the Tea Party and, you know, berated any Tea Partier who even thought about doing anything other than voting for Mitt Romney in the last election. Now, obviously, that didn't really matter all that much because Romney was a terrible candidate and lost. But now the tables are being turned, and they, the establishment Republicans, are trying to push out all of the Liberty and Tea Party-minded Republicans out of the party. And this is no surprise to me. I've called this for years, that there would be a Goldwater-esque style purge that occurred. And that's what we're seeing spun up. And when I say that, after Goldwater lost in 64, the Goldwaterites did not lockstep get behind rah-rah, super rah-rah Nixon. And when Nixon was elected in 68, in 1969, the Republican Party systematically flushed those people who would not go along with the establishment plan out of the party, drummed them right out. They started with the John Birch Society folks, and then they went from there. And they each time would take somebody who was considered more fringe, right? They'd start with the most fringe. I'm doing the air quotes here. You can't see that, but air quotes, the most fringe, and work their way backward towards, you know, back towards the establishment. And so that way there was never a unified front against it. And it doesn't surprise me at all. This was coming, and it's coming now. And the establishment is specifically targeting Tea Party and liberty-minded Republicans to primary. And I mean, if you didn't see that coming, then you haven't listened to me, or you just weren't listening when I said it, because I've said this was coming for quite some time. It should be no shock. The Republican Party is not for liberty. My God, how many times can I beat that into people's heads? They are not for liberty. The establishment behind the Republican Party does not care about your liberty. Stone cold fact. They don't care about your liberty. What they care about is getting politicians in office that will vote them favors for their particular corporation or interest group. That's what they care about. And if the Tea Partiers or the libertarian-ish or liberty people in the Republican Party get in their way, they're more than happy to squish them, to push them right out. And that's what they're doing. Again, it should be no surprise at all. This is history repeating itself. And as they do this, there is an ongoing effort to curb the ability for any other third party or independent group to spin up an effective political organization. In Ohio, there is a push to reinstitute the law that's already been struck down twice by the federal courts as unconstitutional. I guess the third time's a charm, to make it extraordinarily difficult to get onto the ballot. Now, this new version that's come out has been chopped up and hacked up to the point where probably the Libertarian Party could overcome it. But certainly, and that's only because we've been doing this for a while and we know how to do petitioning, but certainly no other group could do it. No other startup group could do it. And that's not right. Meanwhile, you know, the Libertarian Party continues to fight in different areas, these stupid laws meant to try to corral, to try to corral you into a Republican slot or a Democrat slot. In Tennessee, they just won a huge battle that basically allows candidates who want to be labeled as a Libertarian Party candidate to be allowed to be labeled as a Libertarian Party candidate. And based on my reading of this here, it looks like Constitution Party and Green Party were also involved in the suit. But this is a big deal. I mean, shouldn't people be allowed to run under any label they want to? Isn't that the decision of the candidate to associate how they so choose? And it's funny because there's a real effort going on, and for those of you that haven't been following this race, I've been following a governor's race in Virginia, And in that race, you've got three candidates. You've got a Democrat, a Republican, and a Libertarian. And the Republican has been sitting at the high 30s, low 40s throughout the race for the last 4 or 5 months. That's as high a percentage as he can get. The Democrat's been sitting in the low to mid 40s. A couple of weeks ago, he got up to 50 and then dropped back off down to the 40s again. The Libertarian in this race has gone from 6% up to 13%. And that's a twofold, right? First of all, between the Republican and Democrat, they're running a nasty, ugly, terribly ugly campaign. And that's going to turn voters away. The other part of it is the Libertarian in the race, Sarvis, actually has been out campaigning, but also now has an outside PAC running some ads for him. He's got a lot of support, and it's an off-year election, right? I mean, it's not dissimilar to when I ran in 2011, where it's an odd-year election. There's not a whole lot going on nationwide. So Libertarians around the country can focus on that particular race. And what's interesting about it is the GOP candidate point can't win. They keep claiming he can't win, he can win. The polls show he has not cracked 45%. He's never cracked it. Ever. And to say that he can win is probably wrong. His negativity, the polling shows that the Democrat in the race is Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe was a Clinton aide. I believe he was the president or the head of the DNC when Clinton was in office. It's been a while now, but I'm pretty sure that was what his role was for a while. McAuliffe's unfavorability rating is 46%, which is pretty darn high. But Cuccinelli, the Republican, his unfavorability rating is 50%. Now, we had a race like this in Kentucky not that long ago. Our governor's race in 2011, where David Wilkins walked into the race with a 60% unfavorable rating. When you walk into a race with a favorability rating that's negative, if you're net negative, you're not going to win. It doesn't matter if that negativity rating is deserved or not. You can't win. It's impossible because over half the people don't like you. And make no mistakes, politics in many, many ways is a popularity contest. For better or for worse, it is. And so if you walk in with a negative rating, you're not going to win. It's not possible. Now, what's funny is here in the last few weeks, the Democrat, or in the last week or so, the Democrat has actually taken some hits and has gone down as a result. And all these pundits are, oh, my gosh, the race is tightening up. But it's not. The Republican hasn't budged. He's still in the low 40s, right where he's been. The Democrat came down from the mid-40s to the low 40s, at least temporarily. But the person who picked up the votes wasn't the Republican. It was the Libertarian. So the Republicans are having a cow, and they're blaming the Libertarians already ahead of time for the Republican loss, which is exactly what they did with Romney. And the funny thing is, the math showed that Romney's loss was all on Romney, 100% on Romney. Here's a pro tip, guys, in the GOP, just from a little third-party guy out here, don't pick somebody that sucks. I'm serious. Just pick somebody that doesn't suck, and they might have a chance at winning. But Romney never inspired anybody. McCain was the angry old man, still is. You got to pick somebody who inspires. And that's the key ingredient for the Republican Party that they've failed. They are running as an opposition party all the time now. They run as we're not Democrats. And they come up with these guys that are used car salesmen or angry dudes. What if you're smart, you're going to come out with, and it doesn't matter what party you are. If you're smart, you have somebody that's charismatic, that has a positive message, that talks about how they're going to make things better for the country and how that on an individual basis, right? And that's always the trick, is being able to make the individual voter feel like you're talking to them, even though you're talking to millions of people, how you're going to make that individual voter's life better. That's a winning campaign. Everybody knows what the problems are. But if you keep pounding the problems and don't have any solutions, well, whoopity-doo-dah. Okay, you're not blind to what the problems are, but do you have any answers? And that's the problem with the Republican campaign. Once they hit that high 30s, low 40s, they were never able to reach out and get more voters. They were never successful in expanding their base beyond that high 30, low 40 area. And that's what's going to be. I mean, it's just going to be that way. And it's funny because McAuliffe now, the Democrat, is putting out this fundraising letter saying, oh, my gosh, it's not over yet, you know. We need some more money, yeah, whatever. It's over. It is over. Republican is going to lose. And they're going to blame the Libertarian. But I've been following these polls for 4 months, and I can tell you, based on the polls, based on the data out of the polls, that the Libertarian is actually getting more what would be otherwise Democrat votes than he's getting more than what would be otherwise Republican votes. Why is that? I don't know. Is it because he's focusing more on the social issues? Because he is. Is it because there's more otherwise Democratic voters to go around? Could be. But this has the Republican Party just all in a lap to the point, and this is the really sad thing about it all, is that the Liberty Wings, and I'm using that in quotes, of the Republican Party, your Campaign for Liberties, your different groups, are now out smearing the crap out of the Libertarian candidate. 3 days before the election, they're out just smearing the Libertarian candidate, saying he's not a Libertarian. Oh, he's not a Libertarian because of this. They're, you know, taking what has been said, spinning it, make it look as bad as possible in the Libertarian candidate to help this Republican candidate, who is obviously not a Libertarian. Yes, the Republican candidate came out against Obamacare. Well, okay. Yeah. And so the Libertarian. We're not for Obamacare. But the Libertarian response was, hey, we're going to get stuck with this thing, so we need to do whatever we can to get state control of it and minimize the damage. That was his response. And somehow that has been spun into he supports Obamacare. Absolutely not. He's acting pragmatically. He's speaking pragmatically. And the real reason the GOP is out in force right now is because the Republican is going to lose, no matter what. So they're already out trying to spin the losses because we split, right? And more importantly, because if the Libertarian candidate, Robert Sarvis, gets over 10%, it gives the Libertarian Party of Virginia ballot access. Ballot access is a big deal. It is one of the keys to winning elections. Because instead of having to spin your wheels and spend your time going out and doing stupid petitions all over the place, you can focus on your election. You can focus on your race. And make no mistake here, what's really going on now, it's not about, well, you know, you guys are causing the Republican to lose. It is not that at all. What is going on here is that the Republican Party fears nothing more than another potential avenue for the Liberty community to run for office. They're going to lose the governor's race no matter what, but if the Libertarian Party gets ballot access in Virginia, then the Virginia GOP loses control over a movement. No longer is it, well, you know, we have to run as Republicans because it's too hard to run as a Libertarian. That's all gone. That's off the table, man. It's gone. That is what the Republicans fear more than anything else, is losing control of a movement. Because right now, they have a big piece of it under their thumb, under control. People who say, well, I'm running as a Republican because it's the easiest way to win. Yeah, those people, that's no longer an excuse anymore. You can walk onto the ballot as a Libertarian. You can get out with your message sooner. You don't have to run in a primary against some neocon turd. And you get to run all the way through Election Day, and you get to focus on your message and focus on your race. Oh, yeah. That's a big deal, a really big deal. And that is what the Republican Party is freaking out about. It has nothing to do with the individual campaign. They know the Republican candidate has lost. They know it. I know it. I've looked at the polls. It's been over for months. The question is, these people want to stay under control of the GOP. Who's really pulling the strings here? Who is it that is controlling them? And who has the most to win? Who has the most to lose? Folks, it's the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in. Tune in again next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Listen to the other shows on the network. Have a good week, folks.